everyone, and welcome to the Dribble Podcast. My name is Craig O'Donoghue from the West Australian newspaper, and throughout this summer, I'm bringing you all the news and interviews for everything to do with basketball in WA. In this week's episode, we'll have five-time championship coach Trevor Gleeson in the studio for the latest instalment of Trevor Time, and we'll also hear from Basketball WA's new CEO, Nathan Cave, after he formally started in the job this week. Well, we've just completed an NBL free weekend as everyone freshened themselves up during the FIBA international window that was actually cancelled after the fixture was released. So there was no window, and there were no games. But the season resumes on Thursday, and the next few weeks are where a lot of teams will be starting to flex their muscles. So what time is it now? Well, it's Trevor time.
I just have to work out what's best for myself and the family. You certainly don't want to start the season as the best and finish average. You want to start average and finish the best. Some players, even if they don't shoot the ball, can be selfish. He sets a great screen. He makes the extra pass. His ability to read out on the floor hasn't changed.
Trevor Gleeson, welcome back to the Dribble Podcast.
Good to be here.
Last time we were speaking to you, there was a bit going on in your life. Has there been any update at all? It's good to see you back in the studio. So have you had any contact at all from Illawarra?
No, none at all. I think they're quite happy with Justin Tatum, and I thought he did a good job first up, and they've had a break, so they're probably practicing ready go hard for this round's games.
So it looks like, as you say, he's done well, and it makes more sense for them to keep an interim coach for the season than try to find someone full-time for probably the season after that.
Yeah, I think common sense. But, I don't know where rumours start and all that. I had a call not long ago from a reporter said I've signed 4 years, and I said, where about? So it's nothing's happening. I think my next event will probably be overseas.
Yeah, so NBL will be shelved, and you'll look to all the things you've spoken about previously that overseas is more likely to be for the next few years and then come back to the NBL at the end.
Yeah, I'll enjoy summer in Perth and go from there.
Very good. Well, one of the big things that has been spoken about throughout Perth is Alex Saar, a projected number one pick in the NBA. You spent the last two seasons in the NBA. How do you see his prospects for where he would be picked and why he'd be picked in this way?
Yeah, look, there's great potential with him. He has a set of skills already at 18 years old. Well, the draft comes around to be 19, and he's just got an exceptionally great set of skills that suits the NBA. His height, athleticism, his reach. He can handle the ball from the perimeter, which is rare for a 7-footer, 7-foot-1. Can handle in transition, and he can pick and pop and shoot the ball, as we've seen earlier this year where he knocked down 2 threes in crunch time to get the Wildcats a win. There's such a huge upside of him that the NBA teams are drooling over, you know, and that's that. There's no problem. I think he's in the top three. I haven't seen the other couple of kids in there to judge it, to outright give him a number, but he certainly has the full package.
So you had Scotty Barnes with you at Toronto Raptors, who was a pick 4. When they arrive, how are they settled in? What's done to make sure that the big dog who's been on campus or somewhere else in Saar's position, how are they settled into an NBA environment where suddenly they're not the big dog anymore and have to work it out?
Yeah, well, you're playing against men. You know, Scotty was a man child. He came in ready to play, physically strong. And as a man, Alex Saar is not that at the moment. He needs to get stronger. He needs to put weight on. He needs to, fill out with his shoulders. So he has a presence out there. You know, he's got everything else for a 7-foot-1 that he can do a great set of skills. But it's going to be a progression for him. You know, he's going to spend a lot of time in the gym. And that's the reason why he came to play in the NBL, you know, from the overtime, was because he wanted to play against men and the physicality the NBL brings. And it's a great move for him. He certainly gets the opportunity to perform, and it's a good stepping stone to go on to the NBA next year.
So what he is now will be very different to what he will become. When he becomes what he will really be in 2 or 3 years' time, and then build into what hopefully becomes a 10, 15-year career, like, where do you see him slotting into the NBA system the best?
Yeah, he's like a 4 or 5, could guard a couple of positions. I'll probably try to play him in the 3, 4, and 5, which NBA basketball now is getting positionless. And that's he can do that with his ball skills. You know, he can handle on the perimeter. He can get to the basket. You know, he's got a great spin move and finishes at the rim. He just needs to polish a few footwork drills, polish with some experience of getting past heavier guys and guards. But he certainly has those ability. But even though that offense, I think his best asset is his defense. You know, when I've seen him play, he has a great basketball IQ on the defensive end, which means he puts himself in great position off the ball to ready to guard the rim, protect the rim, block the shots, change shots, and be in the right spot. Now, he's going to get pushed around in the NBA with bigger, stronger players and a little bit savvy, and that's where he needs to get that weight, needs to get that strength for him to be a legitimate player in the league.
So there's a lot of talk, will he stay for the entire season? We know that there's going to be pressure coming from different people pulling him and pushing him in different ways. What do you think is the most likely scenario for him? Do you think he'll see out the year?
Look, I really hope he does, but I'm going on past records, you know, with LaMelo finished up early and Giddy played a fair bit towards the end and they weren't in the playoffs, Adelaide, so kind of shut it down. And that's where the pressure comes in from management and from your agent. If you are a lock in the top three or even higher in the one position, they're going to protect their asset. That's where the business world comes into it, which I don't like, but it's a reality of the NBA. And we've seen it time and time again from kids not even going to college, just being outside of view and the stock goes up. The worst thing they can do is keep playing, get injured, or worst thing they do, get played, get exposed, and all of a sudden their ranking goes from 3 down to 20, or worse, gets put out of the first round, which is no guaranteed money then.
So the money is quite remarkable. Like, the difference in wage is about $1 million from pick 1 to pick 2, and then another million to pick 3, another million to pick 4, and it just keeps on going down. Would that be in his head, do you think, or is he not thinking in that way at all when you're a player coming through, you just want to play?
It shouldn't be in his head at all. What he should be doing is, I want to get better every day, I want to get strength, I want to work on my footwork, I want to work on my skill and my craft, and I want to hone that to get better. All those monetary items are secondary. You know, they're fantastic without a question, but you shouldn't be motivated by money. You should be motivated for trying to get his body right, keep working on his skill and keep developing as a player. Those things will come.
And you mentioned that the other two who obviously left when they didn't have finals on the horizon. Do you think playing finals would change that? If he knows he's in a play-in tournament or can go even further, would that be an influential moment for him to show what he can do?
I think it will. But again, that's where the management comes in and say, hey, listen, looking at the big picture. But, you know, time will tell, and to see how he keeps developing, keep growing to the end of the season. And then the good thing about the NBL, is finishes in February, you know, and then the finals for another month. And then so he has time to prepare again for the draft coming up later in that year.
Right now, we're in the middle of an NBA in-season tournament. The courts look a bit random, it's fair to say, when you're watching it on TV.
I'm not a fan.
It's hard to watch at times, isn't it? You are the reigning and only NBL Cup championship winning coach. Do you like the concept of the in-season tournament, having experienced it back in the COVID times?
Yeah, well, we were kind of forced to do it, weren't we, in Melbourne in, was it 2020?
2020, for the 2021 season.
Yeah, and it was great. We played each other eight games in Melbourne. I think that would be an ideal situation for the NBL if they continue that path. I know they're trying to get their preseason up and running with the Gold Coast being so successful. But I think there's room in there to play a cup mid-year and have the games count like we did that season. And also with that, currently playing 28 games. If they play another 8 games, that's 36. That's my calculations. Then they'll play each other 4 times, which is perfectly. I think 36 would be a great number of games. I think 28 is a little bit short. But if they had a cup where they take it to maybe to Melbourne, maybe to Western Sydney, maybe to Newcastle, maybe to Canberra, maybe to Darwin, maybe back to the Gold Coast, and then you kind of get it judged and maybe, again, have it in the school holidays where the kids can come along, and now you're gauging your interest in season. I think that should be on the table for him.
There is a window, actually. So it was 18 days last time that it took to get it done, but only 14 days of actual basketball. They were a couple of days off. There's an 18-day window between December 27 and January 13, so between Christmas and the Australian Open tennis, where there's not a lot going on. There's a couple of test cricket going on, obviously, at that point, but it's a good opportunity, isn't it? You say to say, well, we can play those games, maybe multiple locations, maybe the one location, and suddenly you build the interest in the NBL at that point.
Yeah, and I think the NBA would probably take the leaf out of the NBL's book. You know, we did it out of COVID, out of necessity to play the games and getting everybody in because travel was hard through that period of time, especially interstate and everything locked down. And now the NBA are doing it because they're following Europe with the soccer, and it's been successful so far. You know, the courts are obviously there. You know, it's an in-season tournament. I hate the red courts. I love everything else, but the red courts got to go, or the purple courts. But now they're winding up, so the next week is going to be coming into the last round of it, then the quarterfinals, and then I believe the semifinals and finals are in Vegas. So they're building that up. I think the NBL should really look at that, and it fits hand in glove to what they're trying to do and get that exposure.
So one of the differences between what the NBA is doing and what the NBL did was they've got an actual game to win the thing, whereas it was eight games, whoever finishes on top of the ladder gets given the cup. You guys dominated, and we had a 7-1 record. There was 3 points for a win, 1 point if you win a quarter, half point if you draw a quarter, and you were 6 points clear of everybody else and clearly the best team. Did you like that idea of the English Premier League style ladder, or do you think there needs to be a grand final at the end for the top two teams to actually play for the cup then?
Well, no, I kind of like the point system because you're playing the eight games and it's over that journey of eight games and then get the quarter points, and pretty sure that we got a bonus for that too. And Jack, in his very, very generous offer, shared it with the team, which was unbelievable. And I know the guys were very happy about that, to get that. So yeah, I think I like that format that the NBL had back then. I'd hate to see where you're playing an extra couple of games. I know the NBA, if you play in the final, you're going to finish up playing 83 games for the season, and everyone else is going to play 82. So I don't kind of like that you're going to be playing extra games. But it ticks off a lot of boxes.
Does the money incentivize players? Is there an extra hunger for them? Do you reckon if they know there's money on the line for them during the season?
Well, at first this is a trophy, and that's secondary. Obviously, it's not the NBA money with $500,000 to finish in first per player, but it's I think it works really good to increase the games for the NBL. I think getting around where you're playing, you know, mid 30 games instead of stuck 28. You know, when I first came into the league, we were playing 33. I think there was 12 teams. So we played the 11 teams three times. We finished up with 33 games. Those games got reduced as we lost a few teams along the journey. But I think now it's in a position where they can extend that, and the NBL Cup mid-year would be perfect for them.
And we've seen the success of the AFL with Gather Round. We've seen, as I said, the NBL Cup worked in that season. Taking a different location, getting everyone all in the same place. Is there a different atmosphere, different sort of vibe within the teams when you're seeing each other? I think you're all in the same hotel, weren't you, back in 2021?
Yeah, we were shared in a couple of different hotels, and we had one floor, and another team had another floor. So it was, there is a different vibe. Because you go in there early to catch a game, or you stay in there after the game to watch the opposition. You don't get to do that during the season because you're straight on the bus and then you move into the next place or back. There's no game. So it's great. There's a great energy through that. And, you know, that was really successful, I think, the NBL Cup when they ran it. And I'd like to see it come back.
Big game this weekend for the Wildcats up against Sydney Kings, who always talk themselves up when they come over here. It's always a bit of fun. How do you see that game coming out specifically?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing the Kings. They've had a few changes, and they haven't probably been playing at their full load at the moment. They're probably playing about three spokes in the wheel, and they've got another, you know, five or six to get going. But you take Cooks out of that, the MVP, and DJ out of that. They were two big guys coming for the championship that both proved. So they've got some different personnel. And last game, Sydney had that one in Melbourne for the first half. I couldn't believe what I was seeing in the second half, that Melbourne just outplayed them and out-hustled them. And So I'm really looking forward to seeing him live.
And the rivalry is good fun?
Yeah, well, there's no love lost out there, you know. I might even win my championship ring just in case anybody's there, they can see it.
Well, it's funny, speaking to Paul Smith last year when he said, if we can knock the Wildcats out of the finals, he said it'll be the fifth greatest day of my life behind winning championships, getting married and having kids. And we're like, they talk themselves up, that's for sure. So, look, thanks for coming in. Really appreciate it. Good to see you. We'll look forward to seeing you just before Christmas in another fortnight.
No worries. Enjoyed it.
Well, 7 months ago, Basketball WA CEO Rob Clement resigned from that position, and now the sport has a different person in the chair. Nathan Cave started as the new CEO on Monday, and I'm pleased to say he's made himself available on the Dribble Podcast today. Nathan, welcome to the Dribble Podcast.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate it.
Now, this is a tad random because your most recent job was working downstairs. You were Seven West Media's chief advertising officer for 5 years. So how did that pathway end up making you the CEO of Basketball WA?
Look, it certainly wasn't planned from the day that I resigned from Seven West. It was an interesting journey. When I left Seven West, I wanted to go out on a high, and we had a couple of years of year-on-year revenue increases, and you know, things were going well. And for me, I was looking for a new challenge, and I didn't know what it was. So I left Seven West with, I guess, the idea that I was flirting to go to a competitor. And I was looking seriously at going to a competitor at Seven West, but it didn't look like the right fit for me, so I chose not to go there and didn't really have a plan. So I went on a bit of a journey of self-discovery, and after having a front row seat to Telethon for a number of years and seeing the amazing work that Telethon has done, that Seven West supports, I really wanted to get involved in community. And I didn't know what that opportunity was until one fateful day I literally saw an ad on Seek for the role of Basketball WA CEO, and had a look into it, did a bit of DD, and what I saw I really liked. And I've played a lot of basketball before, so it wasn't too far of a stretch from that regards when the sport wasn't foreign to me, but very much the vision of Basketball WA is certainly aligned to my thinking. And that's what really inspired me to go for the role. So the vision of Basketball WA is to improve the lives of Western Australians through basketball. And I've seen that with myself, I've seen that with friends, and I've seen that even with my own children. You know, when my daughter's on a court, you know, it's really important for a teenage girl to walk tall, you know, to be confident. And I've seen that development through basketball or netball for her, but I can definitely see the parallels through basketball. So that's why I applied for the role.
So your own basketball background, how good were you? What sort of player were you? Talk yourself up, I suppose, in this occasion, because it's the one chance you get to talk yourself up as a player before you go off court.
I think I'd identify with a number of our members and your listeners. You know, I thought I'd one day make it to the NBA, but I was very far from that. I think my professional pursuits might have resulted in a couple of free Subway vouchers every now and again. But no, look, I played some representative basketball over in Queensland, but there's far from being able to produce an income from it.
So this job, it also involves being the CEO of Perth Lynx. It's been 6 months since it became public knowledge that the licence was available for the Lynx in some form. Do you believe BWA will still own that licence next season based on your 1.5 days in the job that we've been talking about so far?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Why are you confident that it will remain a BWA endeavour?
I could say because you said based on 1.5 days. no, look, we're firmly, absolutely laser focused on delivering the season, making sure that the team's the best version of itself. And, you know, I'm certainly inspired by what I've seen. You know, I know we had a chat early on courtside. And, you know, that team is an incredible team and a team that I'm certainly now very privileged and proud to be a part of. So, you know, we want to make sure that this season is very successful. And, you know, we really just want to make sure that we raise the profile of the Perth Lynx. And I think we're at a point with the Perth Lynx where we deliver a really good high-performance program, but we want to take it a step further and deliver an amazing club. And that's probably the next evolution for the Perth Lynx, is to become an amazing club. And that's being completely honest, you know. It's a great high-performance program now that's a club in the WNBL, but the next step is to really turn it into a club. That's our focus.
So do you feel that, you know, do you know where it sits right now in terms of who's been talking to who around, you know, do you find a partner, do you find a massive sponsor, or is selling it the only option? Like, where does it sit now that you're saying you'd like it to remain under the BWA banner?
Well, I think, to be fair, to be honest, and, you know, to be fair and transparent, BWA has a responsibility to enable the Perth links. And, you know, we've seen that recently where BWA has taken on its shoulders to make sure that happens. If there was a point in time where there was a better choice and that was for the betterment of Perth links, then of course it would behove us to have a look at that. But, you know, we would love to secure some sponsorship to further enable the club and to take the next step.
What's the number one thing that needs to happen to make this club become the successful franchise that you would envisage it being?
Sponsorship.
Yep.
And I mean, that's not something that's unique to the Perth Lynx, right? You know, there's a number of professional sporting teams out there, particularly female teams, that need extra sponsorship. You know, there's a lot of challenges out there, and we're not immune to those.
And building attendance must be high on the agenda as well, I would have thought, because that brings in money also. Have you got any strategies to try to get more people through the door?
We're in the midst of that very point at the moment. So, you know, the team deserve to play in front of a bigger crowd. You know, with the strategy that Ryan has, the way he coaches and the way in which the team plays, you know, it's an exciting brand of basketball. So the team deserve to play in front of a bigger crowd, and that's really high on our agenda.
Is Bendat the right place to play all games, or do you need to take it on the road to other NBL One West venues, or even find a different venue altogether? What's your thoughts on whether people want to come to Bendat, and whether that's an issue, or whether it's just there's another reason why the crowds aren't big enough?
Look, I think there's challenges with a number of locations. You know, public transport for a number of different locations around Perth is a challenge. So maybe moving it to another association doesn't solve that problem. Ideally, we would love to boost the crowds to a point at Bendat where we have to move it to a bigger stadium. That would be the ideal outcome.
The Lynx began the season 3-0. Now they're 3-2 following losses to Southside and Townsville last weekend, and face Melbourne Boomers this weekend in Victoria. That's the last three champions that they'll be playing over the successive weeks, and they are three big clubs that have big budgets. Is there any concern from you that you look at and you go, well, it's becoming a case of whoever's got the biggest budget wins the championship, and that it's going to be hard for every team to compete every single year, and it becomes a war of wages year in, year out?
So I think the Perth Lynx have an uncanny knack of identifying talent and bringing talent to our club. Retaining talent is always a challenge, but, you know, if you look at the team that we've got this year, we've got an incredibly talented team. We've got players that play at the level of WNBA. We have a WNBA player that's come into our team. We've got a Canadian Olympian. We've got Australian players, and we've got homegrown talent. So I don't think talent this year is something that's keeping us from having that success. And, you know, the season's far from over and our expectations are pretty high. Funding is always great, but, you know, more funding, I think, will enable us to have more certainty and sign players to longer contracts, which would be certainly an enabler in that. But, you know, we're not looking at this season as a glass half full scenario.
Oh, no, certainly this, anything can still happen, certainly from this year. I'm more talking about from a big picture perspective. It does feel like there's a lot of money that's required to be spent over the normal salary cap and paying luxury tax at the moment by a lot of teams. So to compete in that situation, a lot of times teams are going to have to get into a war of wages, and that's not necessarily the easiest thing for every club to do every single year.
Yeah, look, there's probably a couple of clubs that definitely have that spending power. But, it's, you know, Perth Lynx aren't in a position to put their hand up and say this is a significant issue for us, because it's a significant issue across the WNBL, and we're not the lone wolf there by any stretch of the imagination.
From another female perspective, Goldfield Giants recently announced Jamie Worthington as their NBL One West women's coach. That occurred a couple of days ago. She's the only female coach in the league. Is it a concern at all, whether it's the pathway or it's the way people are being perceived or the selection criteria that's not resulting in women getting opportunities at this level?
Look, it's not ideal at the moment. You know, we would always love that balance. I think any organisation in any sport wants that balance, but we're not too dissimilar to other organisations out there that go through that transition. It's certainly not a choice that any club makes or any organisation makes to limit that. BWA, as well as the affiliated associations and the clubs, have all their own individual initiatives to increase pathways for female coaches. I put it down to that we're going through a transition period. Perhaps, you know, you could say that maybe we weren't prepared for a few coaches to leave the game and we didn't have the next layer of coaching coming through. But, you know, high on BWA's agenda, certainly those pathways to enable female coaches, female players, female referees into the game. But it's not just at the female level. You know, certainly Indigenous participation is very high on our agenda as well and as part of our strategic plan. So there's definitely an investment being made in all of our pathways to enable that. You know, and I don't want to risk isolating one club over another, but I know up in Joondalup, you know, they've got a fantastic initiative that's underway to enable more female coaches to come into the sport.
So perception is reality in most things. It doesn't matter what you're aiming to be, what how people perceive it is often the way that it gets viewed and thought. And it's the same issue with AFLW, I think, with their coaching system as well, that there aren't as many women in there as what people would like. But I do look at it and think, well, when Janelle Morley finishes up at Warwick with a 71% win-loss record and winning an NBL One West title last year and a national title last year as well and loses her job, it doesn't look great from the outside looking in, regardless of how good the person is who replaces her or how talented that person is. And it can be hard to, you know, individualise, as you say. But would you agree that the perception is the biggest challenge at the moment, that if there's not female coaches there and good ones are leaving and not getting other opportunities, that people look at it and say there's something wrong with the system?
I think if you look at something long enough, you'll see what you want to see. And, you know, I'd say the perception for Janelle, for example, you know, she's now the CEO of Basketball WA. So she hasn't been lost to the sport, and I'd argue she's moved into a very important role. You know, I'd say we're in a state of transition. There is absolutely an investment being made to ensure that pipeline of female coaches is coming through. That's part of our strategic plan. It's part of the associations and many clubs. It may be a perception, but the good thing about perceptions is they can be changed. And I'm at day two, maybe at day 202 or 302 or 1,002, we'll be having a different conversation because, you know, there's plans underway to address that.
At day 202, 302 or 1,002, do you reckon NBL One coaches will be full-time? Do you think, can you see that growth happening? Because it's a big job that they have when they're doing a normal job during the day and then looking after teams at night.
Yeah, look, I think that would be the ideal situation, isn't it? You know, that growth of the sport has been remarkable over the last few years. Touch wood, it continues, and touch wood, we still manage to attract, you know, great sponsorship and great funding into our sport that will enable that.
There's so many elements of your job that you have to focus on. What are some of the other priorities, grassroots sort of things that you need to really get your head around earlier and you want to sink your teeth into?
Well, Basketball WA has an amazing strategic plan over the 5 years. So it's something that I've inherited, but I've seen, you know, I've looked through it and I'm incredibly blessed to inherit a well thought out strategic plan. So, you know, facilities are certainly high on our list. You know, there are players and young children that are coming through wanting to play the sport that have been unfortunately turned away because we don't have enough facilities in our sport. So that's certainly high. Facilitating play is another very high priority, and that goes hand in hand with our facilities. Playing the game. So, you know, certainly enabling the actual game and playing in the game, and that comes to the players, coaches and officials to have that in place. And then growing the sport, growing the impact of basketball. So, you know, that's quite a broad goal, but you know, we're certainly focused in those pathways to achieve our strategic plan. So really, they are the four main areas that we're looking at within Basketball WA for the balance of the strategic plan, which runs out to 2025.
So as part of that strategic plan, it does mention in there that you want three more courts at the Bendat Basketball Centre, which was a bold sort of aim to have. Do you think that's achievable with the space that's required and the amount of money that's required to build them as well?
Look, I think we've got the space. Funding is the enabler for that. And, you know, for all of our facilities, it's an ongoing conversation with government. And, you know, government have been really supportive of basketball. So we've got our fingers crossed.
And just finding courts in general, as you mentioned, participation is going nuts. It's hard to find courts available at the moment with so many kids who want to play. Is there anything different you could do? Like, could you use schools? Could you use open air courts more? Could you? Is it? What's on the table to find ways to make sure that everyone who wants to play can find a court and be able to play?
Look, we know there's been conversations at the government level to look at potentially using schools' facilities, and that's just not for basketball but for different sports. So that's one option that's being explored. But, you know, it's going to take the creation of real, you know, real facilities and more basketball courts to enable that. That's the ultimate solution. The sport's growing and the population's growing, and it's a challenge that not just basketball is impacted by. You know, a lot of sports are impacted by the same issues at the moment.
And from a participation perspective, as we said, it's absolutely crazy at the moment. I've got a 9-year-old who's playing at the moment, having a great time. But like every other sport that he plays, it's a parent who ends up coaching, and they're learning the ropes of how to coach kids at the same time as the kids are learning how to play the game. Is there anything you can do to help the mums and dads who are out there trying to teach the kids how to play the game, how to coach and then retain their knowledge in the game as they progress throughout the system if they can't coach for work reasons, then want to come back or do something just to help these parents as they're trying to help the kids?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a really important facet of our game to have coaches that will, you know, enable the development of our players through their journey of playing basketball. So certainly that is part of our strategic plan as well. It's a KPI to be able to develop coaches. It's certainly something that's been pushed down from Basketball Australia and through Basketball WA to the associations and the clubs. That's absolutely one of those pieces that's high on our agenda.
Well, we see you floating around a hell of a lot throughout the next, every single week, I suppose. People are going to see you at different venues, at you know, junior basketball, at senior basketball, at Lynx level basketball, Wildcats level basketball. How often do they expect to see your head bobbing up as people head to different courts around the state?
I will be at every Perth Lynx home game for sure. Day two now, so I've made contact with all the NBL 1 West clubs. I'll certainly get around for those competitions as well. But I think the hardest thing will be to try and keep me away from the game. I intend on being very visible and accessible for everyone in basketball.
How you going with names so far? There's a lot of people you're going to have to remember, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. It's a challenge. I'm certainly a work in progress on day two.
Yeah, it's not simple. There's so many people in sport that when you take over on a job like this, everyone expects you to remember them, even if you've only seen them once in a year or something like that. It's always funny when you have people walking up to you suddenly. You've got to try to remember the face and put the name to it. So good luck.
Yeah, I was really lucky yesterday. There was a Sports West annual general meeting, which was on day one. And a lot of people that I was emailing and were emailing me, introducing themselves, I got to meet quite a few of those people yesterday, Arvo. So it was a really good start.
Oh, well, look, thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Good luck for this job. Hopefully it's a really long-term role for you and you have immense success in basketball and WA continues to prosper.
I appreciate it, Craig. I also appreciate your support. You know, having Perth Lynx visible in the West Australian is an absolute bonus for us, and we appreciate people that will obviously champion the Perth Lynx but champion our sport. So appreciate your help on that as well.
It's a pleasure. We'll see you at the games in the coming weeks. So thank you very much for joining us on the Dribble Podcast.
No worries. Thank you very much.
So that's it for this week's episode of the Dribble Podcast. I should have mentioned earlier that Trevor Gleeson is available for speaking gigs still, and you can contact him at trevorgleeson.com if you would like someone with his skill and experience to speak to your group in any way, whether it's about basketball or corporate. He is magnificent in that aspect of life. So trevorgleeson.com, make sure you get in touch with him there. But you can read all of your basketball news in the West Australian and at thewest.com.au. Thanks to Trevor Gleeson and to Nathan Cave for their time. Thanks to the magnificent Josh Cable for his production work. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Dribble Podcast.